time for Let's Talk Legal with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell and Collins. If you have a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now at 252-222-4848.
And let's talk legal with Cecil Harvell. Good morning, Cecil. How are you?
Good morning, Michael. How are you?
Very good. There you are. And Wes Collins is in studio. Good morning, sir.
Morning, Mike.
Last week, we replayed a best of, but you were in court last week trial.
I was up in Beaufort County and trying to a will caveat case. So, yeah, that went well for my client, but that didn't know how long it was going to go. Several days, we thought, but it ended on Tuesday. So, got back Tuesday afternoon, but was not here early Tuesday morning for the radio, as the judge wanted us there, you know, 9:15, something like that.
And when I asked you, I said, how was the outcome of the trial? You said a term which I didn't understand. You said you'd explain it to the audience.
Well, first of all, I said we won.
I understood that.
That's always a good answer. And then I mentioned that we won on directed verdict. And you said, what is that?
Directed verdict.
It's directed, D-I-R-E-C-T-E-D.
You got it.
Verdict. So I guess maybe Cecil will give us a little bit more intro. We can talk about directed verdict. We can talk about summary judgment. We can talk about maybe today all of the opportunities that you have through the course of litigation for your case to get dismissed.
Okay.
You know, whether you're wanting it to get dismissed because maybe you're defending it, or maybe you're the plaintiff's side of the case and you want your case to continue, but you better be careful because it might get dismissed if you haven't done certain things.
Okay. Cecil, you want to add to that?
Sure. Basically, Mike, a couple of weeks ago, we were discussing here on Let's Talk Legal kind of some of the mysteries of this topic, this very large topic called, you know, litigation.
Mm-hmm.
How does it kind of work? What are some of the inside track? What are some of the defining some of the terminology? And so we had a nice program on that, and we wanted to continue that today. And we may even continue it next week because there's so very much to talk about. And our listeners are constantly hearing these words that get tossed around like summary judgment, liquidated damages, directed verdict, notice pleading, counterclaim. You know, what do all these things mean? So we will try to do our best within the time constraints that we have to kind of begin to talk about this here on the program today. And from my perspective, I see litigation as like a cone. It begins, you enter the cone, and there's the pleadings back and forth, the complaint and the answer and the notifying what the issues are. But the cone is very wide. And then, of course, you know, Wes moves the file, you know, through the cone to the end, which has a very small opening. And the small opening is about the fact that at this point, similar to what happened last week in the directed verdict, you know, the facts are out. The judge is there. The case, the discovery has been had. The documents have been looked at. The witnesses have said their piece in a deposition. And therefore, everything now has become very focused, very narrow. And now, of course, there would be a conclusion at the very end of the cone, the funnel, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Very broad at the beginning, lots to think about, lots of discovery, witnesses, statements, documents, expert witnesses, all of this to be yet to be determined. But by the time you get at the end of the cone, which is the trial, or the bench rulings from the court, things are very defined at that point. And that's a real good place to just say, since we've teased about it this morning, this word called directed verdict. Basically, a directed verdict, Wes, of course, is the expert on this, but from my perspective, that the judge who has heard all of the testimony, reviewed the witnesses, reviewed the statements, the affidavits, the documents, has heard what the witnesses have to say, determines that notwithstanding everything that has been testified to that is in evidence, that notwithstanding this, the jury cannot reach a verdict other than the verdict that he directs. And so he directs the verdict. He takes charge of the outcome of the case and directs that directs the verdict, determines the verdict, notwithstanding the fact that 12 jurors are sitting over there willing to do it. He's not going to let them do it because the evidence will not support any outcome other than the verdict that the judge believes as a matter of law is appropriate. It is a rather drastic measure, isn't it, Mike? It even sounds like it as I explain it, and it is. Most judges are going to pretty much say, let's let the jury decide.
Yeah.
After all, they've been sitting here for 3 or 4 days, a week, 2 weeks, hearing all of this evidence. I'll let them make a decision. This is many times the outcome, but not always. If the judge feels that the evidence just simply will not support any other outcome other than the outcome that he directs or she directs, then that will be determined to be in the form of a directed verdict.
Yeah, the way you explain it, Cecil, you kind of make the complex seem simple because you're right. The judges, they just like to be, when I talk to judges, they want to be an umpire. They want to call balls and strikes, and they want a verdict from 12 jurors. They feel that 12 can do better than one, but it must be unusual that a judge takes it upon himself to say, or herself, that based on the evidence presented right here, we're going for dismissal, case dismissed. And that's more or less what happened in your case, Wes.
Well, that's exactly what happened. And it's happened in several cases that I've been involved in. And, you know, let's see if we can make this clear, because this is not necessarily the judge saying, well, my opinion is better than your opinion, jury.
Mm-hmm.
What it is that at various stages in the case, meaning when the plaintiff closes their evidence, okay, or when all evidence is closed, meaning the defendant has put on his or her evidence as well, the court has all the evidence, has everything that has come into evidence, okay? And that's a whole nother program, rules of evidence, right? And in order to sustain certain claims, you have to have evidence of certain things. And if you do not have evidence of those certain things, then not only is it appropriate and supported by the law for the judge to enter a directed verdict, it's required. It's required that if you don't have evidence for those certain things, then the judge has to direct a verdict under Rule 50. So let me give you an example. Of course, Mike, we don't talk about cases that are pending here on the radio, but this case that we had last week, that I had last week, is not pending any further. It's resolved on directed verdict. This was a state-related case, as we talk about very often on the program. It was a will caveat, and our position in the case was that the will that was accepted into probate, meaning the father died, he had a will from, I think it was 2009, it was accepted into probate in the county by the clerk, because on the face of the document it was proper, it was signed by him, it had two witnesses, it had the notary acknowledgement, self-proving affidavit, so standard situation, it was accepted into probate. Well, we had information indicating that he had prepared a later will, okay, a handwritten will, what we call a holographic will.
Mm-hmm.
That holographic will met all the requirements of a holographic will. It was all in his handwriting. It indicated his testamentary intent. It was located and found with his important papers. So you can have a holographic will. Now, I don't advise it because
sure.
You can be dangerous. But so our position was the will that was accepted into court was not the last will. The holographic will was. So we filed a will caveat. The will caveat is a challenge to the will that was accepted by the court. And our contention was the reason that that will is no good is because the later will is the actual will.
Mm-hmm.
So that case proceeded on for several years, frankly. going through discovery, so on and so forth. And so we proceeded to trial last week, and in any will caveat, there are different stages of the case. All right. Although I am the one who filed the caveat, I'm the one who kind of looks like the plaintiff because I filed it. The rules in a caveat proceeding are that the propounder, meaning the party who says, no, the will is good, meaning the will that the court accepted was good, they have to go first, okay? And they have a burden to prove. And that burden is that they have to prove that that will that we're challenging was executed consistent with North Carolina law. The statute is 31-33 for attested wills. And what that is basically they have to put on evidence that the testator signed it, that the witnesses saw him sign it, were in his presence, and the witnesses, and you have to have two witnesses, sign the document as witnesses in the presence of the testator. Those are very specific things that you have to have evidence of. Otherwise, you don't carry your burden as to the validity of the will that the clerk accepted. Kind of understand that. Sure. It's just a threshold thing. You can't do that through affidavits because when you get to trial, affidavits are not admissible, almost never. Okay, an affidavit contains hearsay. It contains statements that are out of court for the truth of the matter asserted. So you can't just come to court. You can't cross-examine a piece of paper, right?
Sure.
An affidavit. So, long story short, is in the case I had last week, being the caveator, I somewhat sat quietly as the other side had their burden, and as I would in any caveat, just listen closely to make a determination in my mind as to whether they put on the evidence they needed to. And sometimes it happens where you have issues with witnesses.
Mm-hmm.
You have an issue. You can't get your witness to come to court, or your witness doesn't remember, or you know whatever it may be. But those are things that have to get worked out before you get to trial, so you know you're
exactly the
question. You're in good shape.
Yeah,
you know. So anyway, the testimony that was put on was deficient and did not prove all of the things that must be proven in order to sustain the validity of that will that was accepted by the clerk. Now, the clerk did their job because the standard for accepting a will before the clerk of court is lower than the standard of proving a will in a caveat proceeding.
Mm-hmm.
You have to put on your witnesses, so on and so forth. But there's a provision also in the statute that in the event, let's say, a witness is become incompetent, let's say the witness to the will is no longer living in the area, living in the state, or has died, you can put on the self-proving affidavit of the will to prove the will. Well, none of those things happened. So long story short is that upon the close of that initial burden by the propounder, it was clear to me that directed verdict was appropriate because all of the elements of a valid attested will were not in evidence. So it was incumbent upon me at that point in time to kind of spoon feed to the court, Your Honor, this is the law that applies. These are the cases that apply. This is what indicates this is appropriate for you to do this. This is the case from our Supreme Court that says not only is it appropriate, you are required to do it. Okay.
Yeah.
You don't just say, hey, judge, direct verdict. Because, I mean, these judges, they handle all kind of cases. You can't expect them to be an expert in every kind of case.
You got to cite it.
Especially something obscure like a will caveat, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, at any rate, that is how the case ended in 2 days instead of longer. Because I decided then to not put on any evidence. Because once directed verdict was granted, then the estate passes through intestacy. Because I didn't put on any evidence of our holographic will, meaning the gentleman died without a will.
Mm-hmm.
And I represented all the children. He wasn't married. So through intestacy, the estate passes equally to his kids anyway, which is what the holographic will said.
Interesting. Very good. Thanks for that explanation. Let's take a break on that note. We'll come back and we'll talk more, some of the basic elements of litigation. We just talked about that one with Wes. And if you want to call the firm today, do so. 252-726-9050. Or you can go to harvellandcollins.com and learn more. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. We have Cecil Harvell on the phone and Wes Collins in studio. Cecil, you're good at summarizing the complex so that the layman out there can understand that. Can you summarize what Wes just said as far as what occurred in court last week with his client?
Well, I think the way to think of it, Mike, is that there are stops. You know, it's like they're like stop signs all along the way, and I've described this process like a funnel, and I hope people can visualize that. Do you know what I'm talking about when I say a funnel?
Absolutely, yeah.
Good. Mm-hmm. You know, a funnel usually at one end is real wide and then funnels down to a small opening at the end, and you know, think of those orange things that we see along the street, along the highway, the time.
Sure.
And so along the course of traveling through this funnel, this course of litigation, there are stop signs. And a big stop sign is a directed verdict, which can be made at the close of the plaintiff's evidence or, again, at the close of the defendant's evidence, can be made along the course of the litigation at trial. And the judge at that point has to make a decision whether or not he's going to allow the issues to even go to the jury, because maybe potentially the issues just simply do not support the law that would create a verdict in a particular toward one party or the other. And so therefore the judge at the stop sign makes a decision notwithstanding, you know, the fact that a jury is there. Now there are many stop signs. Let's talk about some of them. Like, for instance, when Wes makes a motion in limine, there's another fancy word. That's a motion to keep certain evidence out of trial. The judge is going to rule that you just aren't going to hear about that, ladies and gentlemen. We're not going to allow that evidence to come before the court. That is determined in a motion before the judge called a motion in limine. There are motions to dismiss. The motions to dismiss the entire case or motions to dismiss certain claims within the case, and those get argued before the judge, and the judge then makes a decision whether or not he's going to dismiss a certain issue in the case. Another really big one that we should discuss, Wes will discuss it right now in a moment, which of course is this motion for summary judgment. I would say that two of the biggest motions in the funnel of litigation are motion for summary judgment, motion for directed verdict. But there are several other types of motions. But the motion for summary judgment is also, again, kind of what we might call a stop sign with a hard stop. If the judge renders that the motion for summary judgment should be granted, then that sometimes can be the end of the case. And so let's let Wes talk about a motion for summary judgment.
Right. We're kind of going in reverse order, which is good. That's not a problem because directed verdict is kind of is pretty much the last, as you say, stop when we're talking about places where the case could be dismissed, because that's done during the trial. So moving backwards, the summary judgment is under Rule 56 of the Rules of Civil Procedure, and what that deals with is that once you've done some discovery in the case, and again, we're moving backwards, discovery is going to be answers to written discovery requests, interrogatories, requests for production of documents, requests for admissions, also some depositions potentially. You've gathered up some evidence that you think is relevant to the case, and you know that evidence is then presented to the court to show that there is no genuine issue of material fact. That's what's stated in the rule as it relates to any particular claim. So you have that opportunity. Let's say that you're moving forward with the case and you've learned through evidence that there is insufficient evidence to support a claim,
mm-hmm.
well, you can move for a summary judgment on a claim, maybe partial summary, some of the claims in the case, or complete summary judgment as to all of the claims in the case, and the court can consider that and make a determination as to whether there are genuine issues of material fact that can go to trial. And in the event that you know you don't survive on summary judgment, then your case gets dismissed and the case is over at that point in time. So I mentioned before that affidavits are not documents that that you use at trial usually, and you can't use them at trial usually, but you largely rely upon affidavits, which is a written sworn statement in a summary judgment motion. A good example of how a summary judgment might work would be that, let's say that the lawsuit is about payments on a promissory note, meaning you had to pay. Mm-hmm. You had to pay over time. Let's say that at the time that we filed the case, we didn't have discovery or information with regard to when the last payment was. Well, let's say that we found out through discovery when the last payment was, and we see that that last payment was so long ago that the applicable statute of limitations for that claim expired by the time you filed the lawsuit. Well, we didn't know that when we filed it, but that became something that we learned about and something that the defendant now is raising,
mm-hmm.
and saying, well, look, there wasn't a payment within the last 6 years. So the statute of limitations on negotiable instruments, promissory notes, has expired by the time you filed this. Your Honor, there's no genuine issue of material fact in this case.
Ask for dismissal.
There you go. That's a good simple example of how a judge would take the evidence and dismiss the case, based on evidence that's been gathered.
Yep. One last sentence before we conclude that maybe kind of summarizes the whole morning talk, Mike, is this. Judges determine the law. Juries determine the facts.
Mm-hmm. Based on the evidence.
And so if the judge, as a matter of law, says, well, the promissory note is the payments are outside the statute of limitations, that's a law decision. And so the judge grants a summary judgment. It's a law decision that the propounder of the will has not satisfied the fundamental elements of what is a valid will in the state of North Carolina. That's a law decision, and the right. judge didn't hear that evidence, and so therefore the judge directs verdict.
Right.
Now, that's correct.
Let's
yep.
say those are all determinations of the law. Judges determine the law. Juries determine the facts. Did he have sound mind? Was he under undue influence? Were the payments made? This person is saying verbally they were made in cash,
mm-hmm.
but there's no evidence of the fact that there's cash
right.
paid.
But are the witnesses believable?
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Those are factual issues, and that's why we have juries.
Absolutely.
The two together work hand in hand.
We'll take a break on that note. Great conversation, gentlemen, and a big topic that we can probably discuss in future shows as far as the basics of litigation. We touched on a few points today, especially the resolution point 4, and we'll continue this conversation with Harvell and Collins. You can call the firm today, 252-726-9050, or go online to harvellandcollins.com. We'll be right back. Gentlemen, we're still here. We have about half a minute left. Great conversation today. Thank you, Wes, and thank you, Cecil.
Yeah, so 20 seconds or so left. Absolutely. Litigation is full of landmines. There's no doubt about that.
And stop signs.
Yeah, and stop signs and hard stops. But I think we'll be able to hit some of those again next week, demystify some of those things, and maybe answer questions that the folks have.